Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Paddock Project. I'm your host, Tiggy, and we have so much to go into today. It is finally race week. We have made it. It has been a long winter, but we are here. So today I'm going to be going through a little bit of a preseason testing recap and then also give my thoughts on the latest season of Drive to Survive, which dropped this past Friday. And then, of course, a little bit of an Australian Grand Prix preview. F1 is back in full force and we are here. So, one quick announcement before we dive in. We are doing the Grid Rival Fantasy League again. If you participated last year, it should just roll you over. But if you didn't participate last year, you can still join. The link is in our bio. So just go click that, check it out, and make sure you get your picks in before the weekend starts, because I've definitely made that mistake before where I've forgotten to set my lineup. So make sure you don't do that. And one more announcement. If you are on the West Coast Formula One is hosting 3 watch parties. I am collaborating with them and co-hosting the one in San Francisco because I am now out here on the West Coast. And so if you are on the West Coast, there's one in San Francisco, there's one in LA, and there's one in San Diego. Check out our Instagram and their Instagram for more details. But for you San Francisco or Bay Area people, please come through on Saturday. The race starts at 9 p.m., which is just such a treat for us on the West Coast. We don't usually get those types of race times. So it's going to be at the San Francisco Athletic Club. I think that's what it's called. San Francisco Athletic Club. At 9 p.m., my mom and my sisters are going to be there. It's going to be so fun. And of course, I will be there as well. And I cannot wait to see you all and to watch the race together. So with that, let's dive in. First big piece of news before we dive into anything is that Cadillac has been approved as the 11th Formula One team. This is huge. We kind of knew it was coming from the news back in November. I believe it was November or December. But we have an 11th team. We have 2 more seats. Hinch commented something on the thing about like, oh, I love the smell of like grid expansion in the morning. And so I replied to that. I was like, I take my coffee with 2 extra seats. I don't actually drink coffee, but if I did, I would. I'm just so happy. I feel like that encapsulates my thoughts on this. I'm just so happy there are going to be 2 more seats. So happy there's an American team. I've never felt more patriotic than this, so very excited to see what hopefully they can do and how they kind of lead up to next year and next season, what they're going to be doing this year, what announcements are going to trickle out, who they choose for their seats, so many thoughts. So it's going to be awesome. So jumping into preseason testing. Testing is done. Season opener in Australia is here. So who is looking fast? Who might be in trouble? What should we actually take away from 3 days in Bahrain? Let's break it down. So some high-level storylines from preseason testing, if you did not tune in to the 8 hours a day of 3 days, which I don't blame you if you didn't. But first, there was a power outage at the track, which disrupted a few runs. Kind of proves that even F1 can't escape from random technical issues, but all the videos and the photos and the memes of like the Ferrari mechanics with their phone flashlights and stuff was kind of funny. That ended up being not a big issue, but it was just kind of funny to see that happen. One notable storyline that came out of testing also is that Ferrari and McLaren's rear wings are under scrutiny, at least by Red Bull. Red Bull wasn't thrilled about the potential for some mini DRS type tricks that they still think are going on with both Ferrari and McLaren. So they flagged that to the FIA. And there's no ruling yet, but it's already a storyline before the first race. So we'll see if anything comes of that. Another highlight or low light, I guess I should say, is Ollie Berman from Haas shed bodywork from the engine cover mid-session, which was not ideal and kind of bizarre, but nothing too catastrophic. Otherwise, really not a ton of reliability issues, pretty smooth testing as far as preseason testing goes, and it was good to see everybody out on track. So let's go through some of the stats. For most miles, we had Mercedes coming in hot with 458, Haas 457, then Racing Bulls, Alpine, Williams, Ferrari, McLaren, Sauber, Aston Martin, and then Red Bull. Now, miles don't tell us a ton, but obviously the more miles that teams go, the more data they get. And so it's good to get as much possible data as you can. So Mercedes and Haas and Racing Bulls are probably feeling pretty good about the data that they've got, at least. four fastest laps, top 10 here. We had Carlos Sainz clocking the fastest lap. Now, this doesn't tell us a ton necessarily because we don't know what fuel loads these cars are running at what times, but it is interesting nonetheless to take a look at the data. So Carlos Sainz, then we had Lewis Hamilton, Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Max Verstappen, Alex Albon, Kimi Antonelli, Oscar Piastri, Pierre Gasly, and Lance Stroll. So that was your top 10. We also got to take a look at a little bit of quali and race pace. So McLaren set the pace for both quali and race simulation. They were the most consistent long run pace. They were strong in the quali sims. Ferrari was quick, but a little bit more maybe unpredictable, but TBD, they were second in both quali and race simulation pace. Red Bull then came third for both quali and race simulation, which they're still fast, but they're not looking as dominant as in the past. So it'll be interesting to see how their car looks this season. I'm very curious for Australia and what Max's temperament is like on the radio. I think we'll have a good sense of how the car might fare this season by judging his mood on the radio, probably in the first five laps of the race. I could be wrong. Honestly, even after quali, I think we'll have a sense. Mercedes, maybe some steady improvement, still a step behind, it looks like, the top teams. So Mercedes was fourth in quali and race simulation pace. Williams came fifth in quali simulation pace, which is very exciting, and also in race simulation pace. So we could be seeing a big step up from Williams. Fingers crossed. Strong driver lineup. Carlos Sainz. I'm here for a Williams renaissance, so let's hope. I think it would be an amazing improvement for them to be fighting for P5. So maybe some super quick MVPs, LVPs of testing. I think McLaren comes out on top looking the strongest. It seems like it's their season to potentially lose. Obviously, they were the Constructors' Championships last season, and Lando was knocking at the door a little bit at the drivers, but it's looking like they're strong. Both the drivers did in their commentary seem pretty confident. Obviously, you don't want to play it up too much. There's always a little bit of sandbagging going on and trying to temper expectations, but they are looking good. Williams, another MVP. I think their testing times were strong, even if their real pace maybe remains a little bit of a question mark. I think regardless, though, it seems like they're making progress and, like we said, could potentially be fighting for fifth. LVPs, just a couple of quick ones here. I think Sauber still looking like the slowest team with no obvious fixes. It didn't look like they made huge steps up, but you still never know. And I don't know if this is a super fair LVP, but I'm going to say Red Bull, kind of. It's not because they're slow, but I think because they didn't look miles ahead of everyone else like last year. They're not, you know, right up there neck and neck with McLaren. And then Ferrari obviously is up there as well. And them complaining about the Ferrari wing, it's, I don't know. I think it's maybe not the smoothest start to 2025, but we shall see. So diving into Drive to Survive. First off, we did a watch party in New York City. It was incredible. Thank you all so much for coming, everyone who did in New York. We did it at Fela, the bar in New York City that plays every single quali, every single sprint race, every single race live with sound pretty much at any time of the day or night. So definitely recommend if you're in New York to go watch some races there. There's usually a really good community. They have F1 flags and stuff all over the bar, and it was so fun. So thank you to Fela for hosting us. We had so many of you all come out. We watched the first episode of Drive to Survive. We did a raffle of a bunch of F1 stuff. So thank you to Puma, who provided a lot of that. They gave us a $100 gift card to Puma. I had a bunch of other random F1 hats from Red Bull and Williams shirts and Lewis's old gloves and all these different things. So it was awesome. So Drive to Survive. I think first off, pour one out for Box to Box. They did it again. It's not easy on season 7 of a show to keep making it as exciting. And yes, Formula One provides built-in entertainment. And yes, we did have probably the most exciting F1 season. I'm not going to say of all time because I am not a 1950s onward fan, but it was an incredible season. So is it perfect? Of course not. And I'll go through some of my thoughts and critiques, but I think overall I thought it was super well done. I think every year Drive to Survive sparks a little bit of debate, whether it's fans picking apart the editing inconsistencies or questioning the storytelling choices or celebrating the behind the scenes moments that we don't get during race weekends. Like, everybody's got an opinion on Drive to Survive. Everybody feels some type of way. I've seen a lot of takes online, and while I completely understand, you know, some frustration from the hardcore fans about editing inconsistencies and everything, like, I think it's important to remember this is entertainment. It's not necessarily for us as hardcore racing fans. It's still a pipeline. It's still a gateway to get people interested in the sport. It's drama. It's entertainment. It's reality TV, which often, you know, is called unscripted in the business, but can be sometimes a little bit scripted. So I'll talk about that. But I think instead of playing spot the editing error in this episode, I'm just focusing on the bigger picture of what stories were told, how they were framed, and what worked or potentially didn't. So first off, let's talk about a few themes I picked up throughout the season, and then we'll kind of go shortly episode by episode. First, the hero versus villain edits. I think it felt clear this season who they wanted to paint as the hero and who is sort of an easy villain target. And there were some surprising choices, I thought, between who they picked. So first off, Lando, I think, was painted definitely as a hero. Zach, similarly, although they definitely made it nuanced for both of them in some ways. But I think it was clear that they wanted us to feel really good about McLaren's rise and their sort of Cinderella story this year. And I felt good about it. So they did a good job on portraying that. I think James Vowles and Carlos got a similar treatment of James sort of coming across as the man he is, very thoughtful, very articulate, kind of one-track minded about getting Carlos Sainz. And they painted Carlos as the belle of the ball that I think he deserved to be painted as, in terms of, you know, after losing his seat at Ferrari to being fought over by all these different teams. So I thought they did a really good job portraying those two, but you could definitely tell that they were, I think, angling for them to be sort of the heroes in some way, shape, or form. On the other side of it, the sort of anti-hero villain trope, we definitely have Christian Horner and Max Verstappen up top. They're definitely painted as the villains, and I think they have a lot in Drive to Survive, which they even made a nod to that by including Christian's comment of, oh, you're going to paint me as a villain again, as you did in seasons 1 through 6, sort of thing. And look, I'm not saying it's not warranted on Christian's side. I think if anything, there was too much of him in this season, I thought. And there was very clear, there was a lot of like Christian and Jerry content throughout the entire season, which I thought maybe was a little bit pointed and intentional in some ways. But appreciated the fact that they covered the whole thing during episode 1, but then I felt like he got a lot of airtime throughout the season that I don't know if that would not have been my editorial choice. But another thing on the hero versus villain trope is I thought Oscar got a really interesting portrayal. He comes across a little bit, they don't know necessarily what to do with him. They paint him maybe as sort of this like Max Verstappen-esque, emotionless, cold-blooded killer, which maybe he is, but I feel like that's not how fans necessarily see Oscar. I think they see him as like super unflappable, but a nice guy who's super talented. And I thought that portrayal was interesting. I couldn't tell if they were trying to like make him into an anti-hero because Lando is this hero in the Drive to Survive arc, or they just like didn't really know how to portray him. And then the other one that I picked up on was George. I thought George's portrayal throughout the whole season was fascinating. Like, you just kind of see him doing silly things like throwing Lando's hat off the driver parade truck, or the kind of offhand little boy jokes that they throw into the different episodes. And that was definitely an editing choice, and I'm curious about that. That was the first theme, is this sort of hero versus villain edit type question. Next theme, episode 7. That is the one where they cover the 5 friends, George, Alex Albon, Pierre Gasly, Charles Leclerc, and I forget the other one. Or maybe it was 4 friends, 5 friends? I don't know. But they give them phones, and it's just so much more raw. It feels more unedited. It's more behind the scenes. You get to see Charles at home kind of playing piano. You see them after, like, waking up in Singapore and doing the sort of selfie filming. And I just thought that episode was incredible. And I know James Gay-Reese, the executive producer of Drive to Survive, whose interview I dropped last week, he said that they tried something different in 1 or 2 of the episodes. And I think that's what he was referring to, is this episode 7, In the Heat of the Night, loved it. 10 out of 10. If we had a whole season of that style, I would not be mad about it. So I thought that was great. I thought the focus on Claire Williams and her getting more airtime was awesome. Obviously, still a lot of male voices in the show and in Formula One in general. So there's only so much I feel like Box to Box can do. But I loved that Claire was more involved in this season. And it kind of plays well with the Williams rise as well. So I liked that. I also thought the Will Buxton renaissance was awesome. He did a great job, I think. And I feel like he's gone from this sort of meme status to a respected voice, as I think he deserves. He's super smart. He's a really good commentator. So I thought it was great that both of them were sort of the main talking figures outside of, obviously, the drivers and the team principals. This is maybe sort of random, but I love all the content of drivers speaking their native languages. I think one of my favorite parts of Drive to Survive has always been when drivers are speaking in their native languages with their family. It just sort of feels like an intimate conversation that you get to drop in on. And there's something so much more raw and real about that. And it reminded me a little bit of the F175 Live event where I was kind of sitting in on the French press asking Pierre Gasly, Esteban, and Isaac Hadjar questions. And it just felt like you kind of get a little bit of a different window into them and something that feels a little bit more raw and real. So it adds a layer of authenticity that I love. Two more themes. Missed storylines. So there were definitely some glaring omissions. And while I think they did a good job covering some of the predictable storylines, there were some that I'm shocked that they didn't include really anything on. They included this, but I thought the Silverstone storyline with George kind of becoming the number one driver or whatever, like, it really should have been more about Lewis instead of George. And I thought that was kind of strange and was overall a theme of the season. Like, obviously the season starts with Lewis's announcement in going to Ferrari, but we didn't get a lot of direct footage of Lewis, a lot of speaking to the camera from Lewis. He was kind of, and maybe that was a Lewis decision, not a Box to Box decision, but yeah, we didn't get a ton from him. We got no goodbye from Checo, which I thought was weird. Like, they cover it a little bit that he's obviously struggling out the door, and then they make it into a Liam, Daniel Ricciardo, Yuki battle, but they don't really give Checo the goodbye that he probably deserved. So that was strange. There also wasn't a ton from Yuki's perspective, I thought. They did a good job of covering Liam, and I really liked their portrayal of, like, the Liam test and all of that. But they didn't give us a lot about Yuki's POV, which I thought was interesting. Logan was entirely missing. Nothing really about Colapinto. Like, there were some storylines that were definitely missed, but overall, thought they did a good job, and there's only so much you can cover in 10 episodes. And the last piece, maybe more on the critical side, is I thought there were some very obviously scripted scenes which could have been avoided. And overall, I just want more behind the scenes. Even as someone who watches every single race and loves the actual racing, because of that, I kind of wanted more personal life content this season and just BTS, not really what's happening on track. And I get, of course, you have to integrate that. And again, this show is not probably targeted necessarily just at me. It's like my type of fan who's a very serious racing fan. But, you know, the people who are just getting into the sport or just want to watch something entertaining. But I could have done with less on track stuff, honestly. Whether you're traveling, advancing your career, or just love learning, speaking a new language opens up incredible opportunities, and Rosetta Stone makes it easier and more immersive than ever. I've been on a French language learning journey for years, and one of the hardest things can be perfecting my pronunciation, and Rosetta Stone has built-in true accent speech recognition technology that provides real-time feedback, which has helped me sound so much more natural. It's basically like having a personal language coach guiding your accent every step of the way. Don't wait. Unlock your language learning potential now. Paddock Project listeners can grab Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. That's unlimited access to 25 language courses for life. Visit rosettastone.com/today to get started and claim your 50% off today. Don't miss out. Go to rosettastone.com today and start learning today. Could your daily routine be full of hormone disruptors? There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. To combat this, we've been loving Hormone Harmony from Happy Mammoth, which contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens that help the body adapt to any stressors. With over 30,000 reviews and counting, a bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code PADDOCKPROJECT at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code PADDOCKPROJECT for 15% off today. Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power, so how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That is a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI for new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/paddock. That's oracle.com/paddock. Okay, so for the episodes, episode one, I'm just going to go through these kind of quickly, hit some highlights, some thoughts. Business as usual was the first episode. The season starts with the Lewis announcement, which is definitely warranted, but again, didn't get a ton on that or from Lewis on that. And then there was a lot of Christian Horner. And I think some people felt like it was too much Horner and didn't want this to be given so much attention and so much light. And then I think on the other hand, some people felt like good that they're bringing this to light because the story is not closed. That book is still, that chapter is still being written, I am sure. But I thought it was interesting that they spent a lot of time on that in the first episode, and that was kind of the first thing that we were watching. And what really stood out to me watching this episode is that I was in a bar full of women in New York watching this live, and so the irony of that was not lost on me. But there was nowhere I would have rather been on the eve of International Women's Day than watching this with the ladies. The last part of this episode that I thought was kind of funny was the photo shoot, the Teletubby thing. That was, I really liked seeing that scene. I think everybody in the bar was cracking up, and I thought that was fun. Episode two, Frenemies. This kind of painted the whole picture of the Lando and Max relationship, which I'm so glad that they got into kind of right off the bat. Yes, there were some things that were dramatized. Yes, they took footage from Zandvoort and not Miami in the cool down room when they were kind of trying to portray Max as not happy with Lando's win, et cetera, et cetera. But I thought this was a good episode, and it really got me emotional reliving Lando's first win. I actually almost shed a tear watching this episode because I was there live in Miami when this happened, and I'll never forget the experience. Everybody was just so happy. It was just such a fun moment, so it made me emotional to kind of relive that. And I liked the behind the scenes that we got this episode of some of that, and it kind of hit differently. I liked Lando addressing the Lando no wins thing. Like, this was really good cinematic coverage, I thought, of this arc of Lando finally, after all this time, getting his first win. And then you watch the rest of the season, it's like Lando's getting his other wins, and it's just like, oh, business as usual. Lando's now a race winner, and he's actually fighting for the championship. So that was cool. I did want to talk about Lando's coverage, because I think this season tried to show maybe a different side of Lando. And yes, I talked about him kind of being this more hero figure, but it was kind of, he felt a little bit stuck between these two tropes of the party boy clips and like him cutting his nose and being like going out all the time, and then also the sort of soft side of calling his mom after his race win and I care too much about what people think of me type talk. And so I think they were trying to craft a specific narrative, but they weren't, I don't know, they were maybe leaving it up to the audience to decide how to feel about it. And I felt like they were almost trying to portray him as like the James Hunt of Formula One, but no one is the James Hunt of Formula One in this era. Like, everybody just kind of goes home and plays piano or hangs out with their girlfriends or their dogs or whatever. Like, it's not that vibe. And I felt like they were trying to make it that vibe, and it wasn't really. I think they didn't cover some stuff related to Lando. Like, I thought they would maybe focus on the fact that, like, he's not, his starts could use some improvement. They didn't talk about that, which I thought was interesting. But overall, I really liked this episode, and I liked the portrayal of kind of the Max versus Lando friendship thing. Episode 3. This was the Mercedes episode, looking out for number one. It starts with Susie and Toto. Honestly, my only review is more Susie and Toto content, please. Although, make it unscripted. That would be my one request. But yes, I think one of the most interesting parts of that conversation between those two was Toto saying that he promised Lewis he wouldn't talk to Max. Like, that was a moment. And I just need more context around that. I also thought it was funny that we saw Susie's face when Toto mentioned Alonso. Like, if you didn't clock that, go back and rewatch the beginning of that episode. But my thoughts, I talked a little bit about the George cut and editing throughout the season, but I think he gets a little bit of a rough cut. And maybe, I don't know, maybe he's just like a silly British boy with little boy humor. I don't know, but I felt like it was an interesting portrayal of him. But then I loved when they got to Kimmy and the very first question when they introduced Kimmy on the show, like, very first thing was Toto being like, how was school? Because they're like painting him as this, you know, 17-year-old, doesn't have a driver's license, still in school, kind of trying to find this next talent. And I just thought that line was, it was perfect editing, the way that they teed that up. I loved Kimmy in this episode, and I'm excited to see what he can do, but I like him as a character. Episode 4, Carlos Sainz, S-I-G-N-S, genius title, but loved this episode. I think the whole signing drama and the staging of it was fascinating. I actually had no idea that Williams literally had a contract ready to go, like on the table, had the champagne, and Carlos just didn't show up because of Flavio Briatore. Like, that is insane tea. And maybe other people knew that and I just didn't and was under a rock, but like, whoa, that was crazy. Side note, Carlos's cousin, Carlos, also his manager, remains one of my favorite Dark Horse characters in the paddock. He's kind of been lurking in the background of Drive to Survive for years and has been a character in the show. And I just love that we ought to see more of his role. And I really like him. But the staging that they did of the three teams kind of fighting over Carlos after Red Bull and Mercedes were off the table, which I kind of wish they had covered more. I was really looking for more of an answer of why Red Bull and Mercedes didn't go for Carlos. They sort of alluded to it in terms of like timeline of contract and long-term versus short-term and stuff like that. But I wanted more. But that said, the other three teams, I thought the coverage was amazing. Like Aluni Bravi, hello, this Italian lawyer figure. I really liked seeing more of him because we don't actually see a lot of him, I feel like, in media, F1 media or content or social media or whatever it is. Like, he's kind of an unknown figure. Maybe that's because he chooses that, or also Stake Sauber is not really at the front of the grid. So maybe there's some of that, but I thought that was cool to see sort of a mastermind lawyer type figure using his skills for contract negotiations. I just thought that was like an interesting business perspective. And then obviously finally the actual signing scene, I loved that. And it was I thought this was one of my favorite episodes. Episode 5, the Le Curse of Leclerc. Charles getting his card declined in Monaco. That metaphor just writes itself. I loved that they showed that at the beginning of the episode. It makes him relatable, even though none of these drivers are relatable in any way, just because they are living an insane life. But this was a really good, I think, behind-the-scenes episode. I really liked the pre-Monaco clips of Charles at home with his mom cutting his hair. He just comes across as really down to earth, and him biking around the town and going for a walk before with the dog before the race in Monaco after he had qualified on pole. And you can just kind of feel the dichotomy almost of like Charles Leclerc as a normal guy versus this crazy superstar life that he lives and this crazy superstar that he is. And I thought that was a really interesting portrayal, and I really liked that episode. Then Wheels of Fortune. I thought this was a really feel-good episode. I like that they focused on Zach Brown, gave him his deserved credit, because it really has been, as Will Buxton said many times, you cannot understate how far McLaren has come and how impressive that story is. But I like that they also held him accountable. You know, buck stops with him when they're making strategy decisions and not being clear with their drivers. Like, you know, that comes down to team management at a certain point. So I really liked that they went deep into this number one driver debate between Oscar and Lando. I thought that was really interesting scenes. And that felt like the real raw, unscripted. Some of those conversations felt real raw, unscripted in a way that I wish some others had more. And so I thought that was really good. Yeah, the thought that I talked about earlier in terms of the theme was still playing in my mind of just Oscar kind of getting an interesting edit here in Drive Survive, not necessarily really knowing how to portray him, but we'll see. Episode 7, already talked about this, loved it, looked different. The producers experimented with a new filming approach. I loved it, and I thought the portrayal of their friendship and the arc of their friendship from like karting to now all being racing together was really well done. It felt like a real emotional story rather than like a manufactured type rivalry situation. I thought it was really interesting that they played into the angle a little bit with Pierre of like, these other friends of yours are at top teams and fighting for podiums, fighting for wins, and you're not really? Like, are you jealous of that? And I thought we got a real honest answer from Pierre of like, look, no, I'm not jealous, but does it, you know, kill me to not be competing at that level in a car that gives me that? Yes, because he really thinks that he's just as good, you know, as these other guys who are in top teams and top cars. I thought Alex was awesome in this episode. I really love Alex. I think he's an amazing person and just funny and down to earth. I liked that they focused on Singapore for this episode and showed some of the realities of having to be on European time. And then, of course, the heat and the scene with George in, you know, in tears, basically, and having to like do slow breathing after the race and all that. I thought it's good to show, I think, the realities of the sport and how hard it can be. Episode 8, Elbows Out. So this was the Daniel Ricciardo goodbye episode. This was the kind of fight for the Red Bull seat. I think one of the first lines of this episode is Christian Horner talking about that he's never had therapy, which, yep. And then there was Daniel's goodbye. They had a bit of a montage of him and then him being at home in Australia and sitting down face to face, talking about the camera, talking about how he doesn't know if he, you know, can really take those risks anymore. But it actually, the Daniel Ricciardo goodbye gave us a little less than I expected, actually. But it was still very sweet to see him in front of the camera. I liked the arrivederci and is that how you spell it type thing. So that was good. I really liked the coverage of Liam, and I thought that the testing day, you could kind of feel the pressure and the weight on his shoulders and that it was probably one of the most important things that he ever did. And I was rooting for him in that moment, and just seeing Max kind of like come into the test, hop in the car, do some like really casual laps because he's Max Verstappen, and then, you know, the weight of this guy who has everything on his shoulders, Liam Lawson, having to follow that, and then seeing Christian's reaction, it just made me happy for Liam, and I liked that. I thought Yuki's point of view did not get a lot of coverage in this episode, and I think I would have liked to have seen more of that. Then episode 9, Under New Management, this was sort of an interesting interplay between Haas and Alpine, which was not a super obvious storyline, but I thought it was an interesting episode. I liked that they covered the Brazil race because that was just crazy. And of course, the double Alpine podium was unheard of, so you had to cover that. I actually genuinely didn't realize Esteban left kind of first on his own terms, went to Haas, broke that news to Flavio Briatore. And it was all kind of on his own terms. And, you know, whether this was real or not, they're like painting Flavio as a man who's been like wronged by his driver. And I actually thought it was a little strange that they painted a lot of the Alpine issues sort of as Esteban's fault. I don't know if that was just like a Flavio Briatore take, but it just kind of felt like they were, I don't know, painting it in that light. And then Endgame, good way to close out the season. Toto's voice memo I thought was great. And then I did think there was maybe a little too much racing content in this one. It felt weird that we were like going back to races. I think they went back to Brazil and I don't know. But anyway, I thought the season was great. Of course, there's always going to be improvements, but I hope Drive to Survive continues and more of the episode 7 type filming, please, because I thought that was amazing. And just more BTS. That's what we want. All right, hopping quickly into an Australian Grand Prix preview. It's a big weekend in Australia. It's the first time the track is hosting the opener in some time, and Australia just always brings the incredible energy, incredible vibes. Everyone seems to absolutely love it, and it just always attracts a huge crowd. So I think people are going to be stoked. It's also the Louis Vuitton Australian Grand Prix. They do this Glamour on the Grid event during race weekend. So I'm so excited to see what Louis Vuitton does with that event. And then, of course, the Australian fans are just known for being super loyal, super excited, passionate. They're just such champs about watching races with a huge time difference for literally every other race. So they deserve it all. And we've got not one, but two home drivers this year. We have Oscar Piastri and Jack Doohan, both hailing from Australia. So it's going to be fun to watch them. A little bit about the circuit. So the Melbourne Grand Prix is held at the Albert Park Circuit, which is a temporary semi-permanent track. Most of the track is built on public roads, plus a small section in a parking lot. And they start setting this up about 2 months before the Grand Prix. It takes them about 6 weeks to take it all down. So it's definitely a big effort, as is everything in F1. 5.3 kilometers and 58 laps in total. So for some history and background, this track does have a lot of history. It debuted its first Australian Grand Prix back in 1996. But before 96, the races were held at the Adelaide Street Circuit from 85 to 95. But its racing history outside of F1 actually goes back to the 1950s, when it was a big circuit on the Australian racing scene. So what kind of racing can we expect? This track is definitely considered to be on the higher end with regard to aero downforce. So this will affect tire deg a bit and also the braking system. There are 9 hard braking zones here, and apparently the drivers spend almost 20% of the lap with their foot on the brake pedal. So that is a lot. And another interesting thing to consider here is that since most of the year portions of this track are open to the public, the road isn't as rubbered in as a usual circuit. So this means that kind of Friday it starts to get rubbered in, the conditions really improve for the race on Sunday. So there's a little bit of an arc to the rubbering in and potentially the performance over time. Carlos won last year's race. I remember we watched this. We did a watch party in New York City. I think the race started at midnight our time, or maybe it was 1 a.m. I don't even remember. I think midnight. And we were in a bar with tons of people, and we had been coming off of a season and races with Max Verstappen just winning everything. And so I remember when his brakes caught on fire or something. When that happened, the entire bar erupted. People were going crazy. Not because people were anti-Max. I think people were just so excited to maybe see someone else win a race, and then to have it be Carlos, especially fresh off the news of him leaving Ferrari, and then of course his appendicitis where he missed Saudi. He got a podium the first race, missed Saudi, and then came back and won. Like, just absolutely insane. Absolute cinema. So yeah, I want to get into my hot takes and predictions. So hot takes for Australia. I'm going to go podium. I don't know. This is going to be so wrong, but Oscar, I think, is going to get P1. I think it's going to be McLaren, and I just because Lando is the predictable one, I'm going to say it's going to be Oscar. I'm feeling a good season for Oscar. And then I think it's going to be Lewis, which I know is hot. It's crazy, but the Ferrari is looking fast. I think Lewis is going to want to come out, make a statement, quiet all the people who are like his best years are behind him. And then I'll give P3 to Lando. And then my other hot take is I think it's going to be a Williams double points race. So let's see. And with that, that is it. I cannot believe we're already back in racing season. The next time we chat, it will be an Australian Grand Prix recap. Enjoy wherever you're watching. Cannot wait.